Hey, what's up, Pelicans fans? Welcome to the Bird Rights. My name is Preston Ellis, and I'm the host for the new home to all things Pelicans on Nothing But Net Network here on Dash Radio. Follow us at the Bird Rights and get all the latest on your Pelicans at thebirdrights.com. What's up, Pels fans? Welcome to another edition of the Bird Calls Podcast. I'm your host, Preston Ellis, and we are giving you another two-parter here. First, a recap of the victory against the Los Angeles Clippers with your host Travis Tate and Kevin Berrios, followed by my own interview with a preview of the Pelicans' upcoming matchup with the Atlanta Hawks on Monday night. This is with Peachtree Hoops and Locked On Hawks' Brad Rowland. Thank you so much to him for joining us. But first up, here's Travis and Kevin.
So this is a couple of happy Pelicans fans coming to you after the defeat of the Los Angeles Clippers in New Orleans tonight. What was the final score there? 111-103. The Pelicans generally played pretty well, but had a bunch of turnovers. My co-host today is Kevin. Is it Barry? I should have asked you this already, but is it Kevin Berrios or Berrios?
No, it's Berrios.
Very awesome. Kevin, you were at the game tonight. It seemed like it was an exciting crowd just because the way the game kind of flowed, it was up and down a lot. What was the experience like tonight?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I have season tickets, so like I'm, you know, you see the dead crowd games or the games where the crowd is decked out in the other team's gear. But tonight was one of those nights where, you know, it was a pretty strong Pelicans team out there. You know, everybody was excited. I had one like little kid behind me that was pretty hilarious. He was screaming nonstop, and he would grunt every time a Clippers player would touch the ball, which was pretty funny. People were into it, which is good, you know. And then like I worked today before the game, and so I saw a lot of people come in wearing Pelicans gear, which is always a good sign. You see more and more of that lately, so I think the city's like, you know, starting to turn their attention towards basketball a little bit, even though the Saints are doing well right now.
Well, and the reason those fans are maybe coming out of the woodwork a little more this year, more so than other years in the past, is the dynamic combination of Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins. Let's see, Cousins had 35 and 14 tonight. Is that right? No, 35 and 15. Excuse me. And Anthony Davis had 25 and 10, just ho-hum with 6 assists and 2 blocks. Spectacular plays all over the floor tonight. Cousins had a couple of 4-point plays. He had great passes, including one that we were talking about before we started recording, this like touchdown pass or fastball that Cousins threw maybe about 45 feet down the floor to get Anthony Davis that and one dunk. They were just super good tonight. What do you think about these two, what they've done so far this season?
Yeah, I expected this to be a thing that worked. You know, I was always wondering, I never really got through the idea. I mean, the worry from a lot of the national media or even some people you heard locally about how this pairing wouldn't work. I mean, you have two guys that have all the kinds of basketball skills you want, and they're big and they create mismatches. So like, this is kind of what I was expecting. So it's not shocking to me. So it's every night when I see it, it's not shocking, but it's just super exciting that we get to witness this. And like you and Trevor had talked about, you know, how this is like maybe possibly the best big man pairing ever in the history of the league. And I think, you know, I would say it's hard to argue against that. I mean, these guys have skills like no other big men have had, and, you know, they can dominate inside, they can play outside, they can pass, they can dribble, they can defend, especially Anthony Davis. He has, you know, his blocking ability and his instincts are great. Cousins is incredible at picking up a charge, you know, so it's, you know, a very interesting pairing, and, you know, I'm excited to be able to watch it every night.
I think I said when I was on with Trevor that in a vacuum, maybe their skills would probably be the most talented ever. Obviously, we were talking about combos that won many, many more games and included maybe some championships in there, especially something like the Tim Duncan and like David Robinson duo that was mentioned, among right. many, many others. But I mean, these guys have it all. Anthony Davis is such like a spectacular athlete, and it's a nice pairing to go with Cousins, who's very groundbound. Right. And Cousins is a really good dribbler and can do like crossovers and spin moves and stuff. Like, he's a guard. Davis can do that a little bit too, but Cousins does it a lot more. Sometimes it leads to problems. He did have 8 turnovers tonight, and yeah. he will fall over on the floor and he'll throw some away, and you just kind of take it, I guess, just because the rest of his game is so good.
Right. You know, I want to point out, remember, I can't remember what quarter it was in. Maybe it was the second quarter. He had this like drive along the baseline where he did like this layup that he went underneath the basket and around. Yeah.
He did it 2 times in a row.
It reminded me of that scene in Fantasia with the dancing hippos. You know, have this nice. Huge person that has such nimble feet is pretty impressive, you know?
Yeah, he was not wearing a tutu tonight.
He was not.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
No.
You got to stay PC. I just, you know, got to make sure we represent the way that we should. I found an interesting guy who I just quickly want to mention for the Clippers was Juwan Evans. He is very, very fast, and he looks like he might be a player. I kind of liked him.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to mess up his name. I think it was Richard Flom who came on from Clippers Nation with Preston. You know, he had a lot of good things to say about him, and he thought that he would be in the starting lineup, or, you know, they weren't sure if Austin was going to play in this game or not, but, you know, he was really high on him and Thornwell. And I thought Thornwell played pretty decently too, you know, their role players were good. They had a lot of balanced scoring on their team, so that's a sign of like good role players, you know.
I like Thornwell. I also just like watching DeAndre Jordan a lot. He's like an interesting like kind of leader guy. He sort of like holds court over whatever is going on in the paint. It seems like a lot of talking with both teams. So I just kind of like, he's fun to watch.
Did you see, I ran into, I went and met up with Ollie and Trevor at halftime, and I didn't see this during the game action, but Trevor showed me on his phone, Gentry was holding, DeAndre Jordan's jersey.
Yeah.
And tried to draw him into a technical. That was pretty interesting.
Yeah. But he like did it with a smile afterward, I think. Cause he coached him for a while, didn't he? Or was he?
Yeah, he was there with the Clippers, right? He was an assistant there. Yeah, he was an assistant there for a while.
So, yeah, I have the feeling they go way back. Let's talk about Drew, I guess. Did we already talk about Drew? Do we have to talk about Drew?
It's
just depressing.
We need to do.
He's not very good.
What we need to do with Drew is we need to hire a guy to check his passport and stamp it before every game, maybe. But the only good game he's had so far is the Toronto game. Maybe make him think he's in another country.
He likes that poutine. He needs more poutine in his life. Don't they have a lot of that in New Orleans?
We have essentially a lot of cheese, variations of cheese fries. You can get like red beans and rice cheese fries and whatever, you know, etouffee cheese fries. But I don't know. I mean, they probably have a place that does poutine, though, I would think.
Well, that's where Drew's trying to go, I guess. What is going on with him? Is he just out looking for restaurants and just kind of, it just doesn't seem like he's really there.
You know what's funny is like I sit maybe 4 rows behind his parents' seats. Well, his dad's usually not there, but his mom is consistently there for most seasons. But I've seen her once this year. Like, she doesn't even want to watch Drew. I think she's like, I think she's gone watch Justin now. Like, I think that's how bad it's been.
Yeah, that's not too good because Justin is struggling shooting the ball. I wish the best for him. Let's see, what else happened this game? I don't know. What do you think about this team moving forward, I guess? It was a good win tonight. They played, you know, those were some crunch time minutes, the last couple minutes, and they came up with some plays, so they got to feel good. What do we got up here?
I think one thing is, you know, like tonight, if we would have cut down on turnovers, I mean, we had 23 turnovers, but we shot the ball incredibly well. We had 51 rebounds, something like that. If we don't turn the ball over, that's like a 20-point victory tonight, you know. And
play the same way against Atlanta on Monday?
Yeah.
I mean, because I would imagine – or do you think that the turnovers were at all forced by what the Clippers were doing?
No. Most of them were just sloppy passes or sloppy handles. You know, and then you have the thing that I just really can't stand is stepping on the baseline when you're about to drive to the hoop. It's like, you know, how much lack of court awareness do you have? That's crazy. We saw that happen tonight. But, you know, with Rondo coming back, to clean that up a little bit. You know, I don't know what's going on with Drew, but he needs to get his head on straight, but if he's not with Rondo back, he won't be, you know, handling the ball as much. So if he doesn't get his head back in the game, I don't know what's going on with him, but, you know, at least the ball will be in Rondo's hands, who isn't likely to turn the ball over nearly as much as Drew has been. I mean, DeMarcus is going to turn the ball over. That's just how it goes. I mean, he's a high usage guy. He's a big guy who's driving from the three-point line a lot of the time. So, you know, he's got a high dribble. It's going to get stripped, poked out sometimes. You know, that's going to happen. But you can live with that because he makes up for it in other ways, whereas Drew's not making up for it. He's not scoring. He's not, you know, his defense is even slacking from what it was. He was better defensively tonight. But then again, he's guarding guys that aren't, you know, Austin Rivers isn't a great player. Thornwell and Evans are rookies. So, you know, to say that his defense is better is maybe it was, but maybe it's just who he was defending as well, you know?
Yeah.
But another positive from tonight is the more role players continuing to play well. You know, I thought Etuan Moore had a good game. And one of the big positives is Cheick Diallo coming in and playing quality minutes, because we've all been clamoring for, you know, a reserve big to step up, and, you know, he looked nice out there, you know?
Yeah, I was going to bring up those two exact guys. Cheick played 19 minutes tonight, came off the bench relatively early, you know, and I guess it's always a little bit surprising just to see him maybe that early in games.
Yeah,
but he had
the first quarter, huh? He came in?
Yeah. He had 9 points on 4 or 5 shooting. 6 rebounds, 2 fouls. But generally, he looked good. He had, you know, some really nice shots in there. I mean, he shot 4 for 5. So, hey, that's always nice to do when
you're
a guy.
He had a pretty long two in there, too, showing, you know. Yep. He took that one long two, showed some stroke out there. That was nice.
Yep. And the other guy you mentioned, Etuan Moore, I thought he was excellent tonight. He's the one guy who you can guarantee is always going to be moving. Maybe not guarantee, but more often than many of the other players, he's going to be the one on the move. And he got himself some buckets just because he's a tireless runner. And I thought he did that well tonight, and he looked good.
Yeah, no, I'm a big Etuan fan. I mean, he hasn't lived up overall to what I thought he would be so far this year, but he has put together a few nice games recently, and tonight was one of the better ones, you know. So I'm hoping that continues, that trend. I really like him. Ollie always jokes with me about how much I like him and how I'm always trying to convince him that he's a better player than he thinks he is. But, you know, he's starting to show it, I think.
Yeah, he might have a really nice role on this team as that guy who's just always on the move. I mean, he would be the poor man's idea of, you know, a Ray Allen or a Klay Thompson or, you know, Bradley Beal or something like that. But he's not, I don't think he's at that level. But he is, he's like a nifty player.
Right. He's got a great little floater game. And then, like you said, he's always running around screens and finding spots to get open. You know, it's, getting more consistent with the shot is important. But I mean, I think he has that. He just, you know, it's just one of those things sometimes. It was just, I think, a weird circumstance that we had like three or four of our better shooters in a slump at the same time to start the season. And I think that's starting to round out a little bit, you know. And another guy too, Darius didn't have the impact that he had the last couple of games, but he still came in and hit some shots. And, you know, so I think that looks good as well. I'm happy with the way he's been looking lately as well.
Yeah.
What do you think? Totally. What do you think about when Rondo comes back? What's your prediction of the starting lineup?
I have the feeling that as this team has been playing better lately, and if they continue to keep playing better and win a couple more games here, that he doesn't start. I sort of think that they want to keep, like, they can feel some momentum building. And so maybe they don't want to mess with the chemistry of the starting lineup or the guys who play a lot. Because, I mean, this is going to be the first time with them playing together. What did he play? One preseason game?
Yeah.
So, you know, they don't have anything going. And you know, what we do know we've got going is Cousins and AD.
Is that what you think or is that what you want?
That's what I think. And I would say it's also what I want because I'm also a big Jameer guy. And so I would rather play Jameer until he maybe begins to slack off a little bit. Not slack off, but like maybe not do as well because he kind of came in and he's been like really good. And I doubt that he's going to keep this level of play up.
My only issue with that is first, I mean, I think that the whole team had bought into Rondo being the floor general and their leader. So by having him coming off the bench, it sort of diminishes him a little bit. And also you're talking about a guy who wavers sometimes defensively if he's not engaged. And if you're bringing him in off the bench, that's a risk you run of getting bad Rondo or disinterested Rondo. But the other thing is for me is that Jrue Holiday has been a garbage fire except for in Toronto. So, like, I think that
moving
him off the ball again, you know, and having Rondo in there being that floor general, taking that out of his hands, you know, maybe hopefully unleashes Jrue a little bit more. I don't know.
You have Jrue run the second unit with AD, maybe. They have a good pairing. It's just been that he hasn't meshed well, basically, with Cousins. I mean, those are... I believe that's a summation of what the numbers say as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think like they could start both of them together, then sub one out fast, you know, and then, you know, maybe,
I mean, that's a totally interesting
Rondo
thought.
Cousins leave together, and then
Holiday
takes over, you know.
Yep. I get that.
We didn't see Tony Allen tonight, did we? I don't think so,
no.
Right?
No. Yeah. Was this maybe a scheduled night off or something?
Maybe. I don't know. It was the night before in Toronto, we didn't see Ian Clark and we saw him a lot. So I don't know. Maybe it was a matchup thing that they saw, but I don't know what the decision was in that.
Yeah, me neither. What else? Are we going to be winning a bunch of games here before we get Rondo back? He's expected to come back on the 17th, I believe. Is that correct?
That's what they've been saying. Yeah.
And so we've got that Atlanta game I mentioned, which is Monday, and then Toronto on Wednesday, the 15th. And then, so Rondo would be back the next game, which is a road game, Denver on the 17th. Right. National TV.
Oh, well, then you definitely want Rondo playing because that's when he's his best, right?
True.
Is that ESPN or TNT? It's ESPN, yeah.
ESPN. Started, right? Yep, ESPN, 9:30. So what do you think happens in the next couple games? Do we stay hot? I mean, AD and Cousins, again, I mean, these guys are just so dominant, but do you think they keep it going at this level?
Yeah, I mean, I think you know, those two I'm always expect to come out and play the way they play. And, you know, we've had two bad boogie games, and some of that is fatigue. But for the most part, those two, you can just expect to be fantastic every night. And it just all depends on if you're going to have, like, two other people step up. I think, you know, playing Atlanta, you know, looking at their roster, they're not great. I think they have a good coach, and they have a couple of pieces that are interesting. But that's a game you should definitely win, especially at home. And so I'm expecting that to be a win. And then Toronto, we played them well in their house. You know, again, if Boogie plays like his normal self, that's a win for us. Of course, you had that crazy Drew Holiday game, which I don't know if we can depend on that. But if you get good Cousins and you get good Davis, and you just get a couple other guys playing at an average level, I think that can also be a win. I mean, I had predicted 4-1. I thought we would lose the Indiana game and win the Toronto game, but that was swapped. So we'll see. I'm still positive, and, you know, I'm just hoping Drew can figure something out for the next couple of games, or at least we get another solid Etuan performance, maybe a Darius performance. But, you know, and we also have that ex-Pelican factor coming in on Monday night, too, with Luke Babbitt, who, you know, those guys like to come in and light us up. And, Luke, he has a lot of flaws, but that guy can shoot the ball. So if they're
he can
not
shoot
plug,
it.
And another thing that I always thought was underrated with him is his ability to swing the ball. Like, he used to swing the ball around the perimeter like nobody else would, you know?
Sure.
So he moves the ball, and he takes smart shots, and he can hit them when he's open. So if our rotations are late and slow, he could burn us. Although, you know, he's terrible on defense, but, you know.
I wonder if he's ever been the big man in a pick and roll and rolled to the hoop instead of popping out for three. I wonder if he's ever done that.
Like, you know, remember when was that? I'm trying to remember if that was the last. No, it wouldn't have been the last days of Monty. It was maybe the. Hey, he didn't play with Gentry, did he? No.
I don't think so.
There was like a season where at the end we had a bunch of guys that were a bunch of 10-day contracts. We had like James Ennis and Frazier and Babbitt, and I seem to remember him like going to the hoop a little bit in those games towards the end when those units looked pretty good together.
I looked ahead a little bit on the schedule, and so let's say Rondo comes back for that game on the 17th. So, somewhere about their next like 10 games or so are pretty difficult. They're going to play the Thunder, the Spurs, the Warriors, Timberwolves, Jazz, the Warriors again. So they're going to have a bunch of big games coming up. Are you sure about, you know, does this maybe change the plan of what you had and wanted to do with Rondo at all? Or does that not affect you?
No. I mean, I think it makes these next two games really much more important, because those are definitely, you know, games that you should win at home. I think Toronto is going to be coming in on the second night of a back-to-back as well. So that should help us. If I'm not wrong, I'm pretty sure that's right. So take care of those. Go to Denver. Playing in Denver is really tough. Regardless of if the team's good or not at the time, it's just always a tough place to win. But I think you got to get Rondo in there right away. I mean, I'm not saying you play him 30 minutes in the first game, but get him in the starting lineup and start to get them used to playing with him. You know, then look, you can lose all those games. You just want to try to beat, I think you want to definitely try to beat Denver, and you definitely want to try to beat Utah. the Spurs and the Warriors, in those games you can't really expect to win. And if you do get any of them, that's a bonus. But you want to win the games that are winnable. In matchup-wise, Denver and Utah are winnable games. So if you can just get those two, I would consider it a success.
I'm going to open it up a little bit here. What NBA team have you seen the most of this season other than the Pelicans?
I would say the Spurs, actually.
Really?
Yeah, I've watched a few Spurs games. I've been kind of interested in how they would. One reason is I've been really interested in Kyle Anderson. He's just a guy that I thought would be like a nice fit for the Pelicans. He like intrigues me. And with Kawhi out, he's getting a lot more minutes. So I just kind of wanted to watch how that played out. And also I wanted to see because we're testing the trend of the NBA of going smaller with bigger guys. And then the Spurs are also, they're playing Aldridge and Pau Gasol together. So Pop's doing that and we're doing that. You're doing this kind of similar thing as Pop, even though our guys are a little bit different than what they have, but it's still playing to more traditional bigs, especially Aldridge is kind of like an old school post player. That's really where his game is best. So I just kind of wanted to see how they were doing things as well. I've been kind of watching them a bit.
Have you seen Brandon Paul at all for them?
Brandon Paul, yeah, I have seen him.
How is he?
He looks all right. I mean, I think he's still a work in progress, but, I think he's going to be a player. I don't know if have you ever really watched Kyle Anderson play?
Yeah, a little bit. The Spurs are one of those teams that I don't watch often on League Pass, but I will watch them. I mean, I'll watch them a ton in the playoffs.
Right.
But,
yeah, just like,
I'm yeah, no, I mean, guy. He's just that slow-mo. Well, yeah, I mean, you gotta love, I love any, ball handling and passing centric wing. I'll take that guy every time.
And he's like a really good defender. And
and
I think he's like a pass first guy. So he works good with high usage players and he's got a good, handle and he can play like four positions. So like for a team like the Pelicans who constantly have injury problems or just, deficiencies in different spots and want to create different kinds of mismatches. I think he's he would be a perfect kind of player to have because you can just slot him in with any kind of lineup because he can play four positions out of the five on the court,
Yeah. Another guy obviously is DeJounte Murray who has taken the starting point guard role for them. Hopes are high there.
He's been pretty fun, man. He gets out. He's fast.
He looks good.
Yeah. And another team I haven't been able to watch as much basketball as I normally do so far this season because I've been traveling a bit. Now I'm back and settled in. I'm starting to watch a little bit more. But another team, obviously, I've been intrigued by is the 76ers. So I watched them a little bit, too.
Yeah, I've seen a number of their games so far this year. Ben Simmons, I'm just like drooling over Ben Simmons. Embiid, we know what Embiid can do. He is a spectacular shooter of the basketball. I mean, the guy just does. He shoots like AD style, where like halfway through the second quarter, you look and he's like 7 of 8, and you're like, oh, okay. Right. So this guy's really good.
Yeah, and then I'm a big fan of Covington as well, and I like Rashad Holmes a lot too. I mean, he's another guy if you could have him as the third big down here, oh my God.
Love it.
The guy is like super athlete, great instincts, really good shot blocker. He can even shoot threes now. I mean, that would be killer if you have a guy like that.
One of the games that I saw them win was a game where Redick went off late. He's just like a hilarious addition to that team and very much needed. He's that guy who I described Etuan Moore, where he just runs around every screen known to man and takes and makes a lot of threes.
Yeah.
So,
And then the whole fault situation is just so weird.
Oh yeah. But yeah, that's unfortunate.
That's even more interesting. Yeah.
But hopefully they can celebrate with Ben Simmons this year.
Right. I guess that's what happens when you get a ton of early draft picks. You know, if you hit on two or three, then you're solid. And they hit on two big ones, you know.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Any other teams or who's your MVP so far this year?
I mean, I would say.
Boogie, and you have to account for a you need a narrative. The guy has to have a narrative.
See, I mean, well, I think if we can be, you know, say like a fifth, sixth seed, I think, you know, Cousins has a really strong case. You know, he's a guy who's had the bad rep. He's got the redemption story coming over. He's putting up insane numbers. I mean, I think Anthony Davis is the better player. Don't get me wrong, but the storyline for Cousins is there, and he's going to have probably more points per game, and then he's got the assist advantage. So I think, you know, if we could somehow get to sixth or fifth seed, he would have a good case. Harden's been looking incredible carrying that team. You know,
LeBron
Kyrie,
57.
Yeah. But that team is, you know, they're not even, or are they 500 yet?
No.
I mean, not that I don't think that, I mean, obviously I think they're going to be really good, but, you know, it's hard to talk about an MVP candidate when they're under 500. Yeah. But Kyrie in Boston has been incredible. And, you know, did they win like 8 in a row or something like that?
I think it's 9 now.
And they're relying on they got a rookie playing big minutes and a second year player playing big minutes when they were expecting to have, you know, Gordon Hayward. So he's like taking that on. And I think, you know, that's a good story. And then also, you know, like the story of leaving LeBron, like not wanting to play with LeBron and being and having his own team. And then he goes there and they're like killing it. And he's putting up great numbers. You know, he's even looking like a decent defender out there at times. So I think, you know, he has a good storyline as well. And then, you know, like I said, Harden too. And he's carrying the team right now without Chris Paul.
Yeah,
and
I do.
Giannis.
Giannis
either. I mean, that's one of my favorites to watch too. Although I find that their offense has been really kind of boring lately. I don't know if you watch the Bucks much.
Yeah, I watch a lot of Bucks. I watch them probably just as much as I watch the Pelicans, really, anymore.
What do you think about their offense?
So they won a game tonight. They just beat. Who'd they beat? I was just watching it. But they won a game by about 10. The Lakers, because Lonzo Ball had a triple double. But Giannis will become a little bit ISO sometimes, and they're really obsessed with trying to get him the ball on the block in various places. And just doing that really does bog things down, which I think is probably what you're getting at. They're great when they're free-flowing and going up and down the floor and stuff, especially now that they got Bledsoe. So they just went from, like, a Ford, you know, to something more like a Ferrari or whatever.
Right.
So it's going to be...
I love Bledsoe, so.
That could supercharge their offense just a little bit, which is what they need, because they're relying too much on Dellavedova. Really.
Yeah.
I mean, he just has the ball like way too much.
Definitely. Do you think, I mean, I haven't seen them yet. They had added Bledsoe. Are they doing Bledsoe, Brogdon, Middleton, Giannis, and Baker? That's the starting lineup. Yeah. That's cool. I like that lineup.
Well, in the last few games, they haven't started Maker. They've started John Henson, who's just been really good. Yeah. Pretty effective. It's just like kind of doing what John Henson does. Just nothing, you know, he's no DeAndre Jordan. He's no Cousins. He's no Anthony Davis. So,
I mean, he's a pretty decent, you know, he's a decent big man, solid, unspectacular, solid guy.
Right. So yeah, I've probably seen them the most. But yeah, I guess league MVP for me. Oh, the one guy I was going to mention is a guy who's on the Celtics, but isn't Kyrie Irving. I've just loved what I've seen out of Al Horford. Seems like every time I turn on one of their games, he's like making like giant, gigantic, like game ceiling, like long twos and threes. I just think he's been great. I think he's shooting like a super high percentage, and all of his stats are like much higher than they've normally been. So they've got quite the pairing there already with him and Kyrie, although he did just get knocked in the face the other night.
Oh, yeah.
So he might have concussion.
Oh, yeah, I did see that. Yeah.
So that's all I got.
Yeah.
Kevin, anything else you want to tell the crowd? I'm sure you've written a lot of stuff lately for the Bird Rights, and I know you've been on a number of the other Bird Rights podcasts.
Well, real quick, I don't think you gave us your prediction of the next couple of games. What do you got?
Ooh. Well, I'm a little bit worried just because I think the level of competition is going to go up a little bit. Other than, I mean, we did play the Cavs, and you know, that was, it's hard to know what to make out of the Cavs right now. So they're going to get a little bit more consistent, like good teams, I guess, is what I mean. So I see, you know, I don't see them beating the Spurs, you know, or Warriors. I think they would be lucky to go 500, I'd say. So, I mean, maybe that's a good thing. I don't know. I mean, any game you can win in the NBA right now feels good.
Right.
Because there's no like great team. Like every team seems like they're like 4-5.
So you think we beat Atlanta and Toronto or?
Yeah. I'll give us those two wins like you predicted as well. And then that Nuggets game, I just don't know. I don't know what's going to happen with Drew and, I mean, and Rondo and Jameer.
With Rondo, yeah. Yeah, you have anything coming out on Bird Rights soon? Or?
Man, I don't know. Anymore, my schedule is very difficult to get to do post-game recaps. But love doing the podcasts. So I think I'll be available to go on one in a couple of days. So you might be hearing me again, Pelicans fans.
Yeah. I'm sure I'll probably be on one maybe Friday with Ollie and Preston. And then I've been working on a really big piece for Antigravity magazine, but it's like a music magazine. So if anybody's interested in sort of underground music, I got that coming out. It'll be in the December issue here in New Orleans. It's a print magazine. And then I have a concept I'm about to start working on once I sort of finish nailing down this article, that article I was talking about. It's like sort of Facebook stalking our exes, where I go and look at all, you know, recent ex-Pelicans that are in the league, you know, specifically, you know, my always Pelicans crush Tyreke Evans, who's making a strong case for a sixth man of the year over in Memphis, playing great over there.
Cool. Well, yeah, so we're going to end it here. I guess give us the good ratings and download the podcast and do everything you can. TheBirdRights.com, at the Bird Rights. This is Travis and Kevin. Now we're leaving. All right, bye.
All right.
All right, now we are joined by Brad Rowland of Locked On Hawks and Peachtree Hoops. Thanks for taking the time, Brad.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Always happy to talk some Hawks basketball, even when they're not doing so well.
Yeah, right. We definitely know that sentiment very well here in New Orleans, being a sub 500 team for, I think, 3 years straight before this past week. We climbed to 6-5. So now we're at 6-6, but things are good in New Orleans for the first time in a long time. You guys can follow him at BT Rowland, and you can find his work at Peachtree Hoops. And if you want to listen to his pod, hop on over to at Locked On Hawks. Those are the right spots, right, Brad?
Absolutely, yeah. I would encourage anybody that wants to listen or read anything about the Hawks to go ahead and do that. I know probably not a ton of your listeners looking to do that, but hopefully if they want to find me, they can.
Hey, you never know. The people who listen to this podcast, and there are a surprising number of them, actually. And it also says on here that 45% of our listeners are women. I don't know if that's like teenagers listening to their mom's computers or something, but these are all diehard fans. So if you can expect anybody to listen to the voice of the enemy, which Brad is, Locked On Hawks podcast host over here in the flesh, these are probably the guys who are going to do it. Or I like to go over to Peachtree Hoops, which I just did a few minutes ago, just to see how you guys are playing, get a good idea of who we can expect to see. There's so many injuries already early on in the season. And that's a pretty good segue, because I definitely wanted to go to that at some point. I was reading over one of the articles on Peachtree Hoops, and it's got a pretty lengthy list of guys who are either out or pretty banged up. We've got DeAndre Bembry with a broken wrist, who's only played one game. Miles Plumlee, there's conflicting reports. One article said it was a strained hamstring. The other said it was a quad. And then Mike Muscala with a sprained left ankle. Ersan Ilyasova with a bone bruise in his left knee. Marco Bellinelli with a sore Achilles. Dennis Schroeder with a sprained left ankle. And Malcolm Delaney with a sprained right ankle. Did I miss anybody, Brad?
That is it for now. There's a couple other guys who have been on there, on different points of the season. But going into the most recent game, seven guys in the injury report. So, kind of a walking wound right now.
I know. DeAndre Bembry, we can expect, will definitely not be in the lineup on Monday, right?
Yeah, Bembry's it's a 4 to 6 week timetable. I think we're somewhere in the middle of the early week three. So, yeah, he's definitely going to be out. And I would expect I'd be pretty surprised if we were to see either Miles Plumlee or Ursula Ilyasova as well. Plumlee's not played a game this year. I think they're taking it slow with him. Ilyasova, I guess, could be back by the time they take on the Pelicans. But, Bembry and Plumlee are almost certainly out.
Yeah, and Pelicans fans who listen to this will actually know DeAndre Bembry quite well, since we were such avid watchers of Cheick Diallo in Summer League, and he had those two epic matchups with Bembry and John Collins. And we'll definitely get to John Collins, because I know he's been playing a lot in his first year. First off, let's just talk your offseason. The Atlanta Hawks had a pretty major overhaul this offseason. After last year losing Al Horford, this year you lost Paul Millsap, you traded Dwight Howard to the Hornets in exchange for Miles Plumlee and Marco Bellinelli. And a bunch of reports saying that some Atlanta Hawks players cheered as the trade was announced on Twitter. That doesn't sound too good for Dwight Howard. But then you guys drafted John Collins, like I said. He had those awesome summer league matchups. And you acquired Dwayne Dedman and Luke Babbitt, the former Pelican. You guys are out of the gates 2-9. Brad, have the Hawks now officially entered rebuilding territory?
Yeah, I think that's pretty safe to assume. You know, coming into the offseason, there was some debate whether that was going to happen, but the Hawks did not even offer Paul Millsap a contract, which is probably the clearest example of them looking to move in a different direction, because Millsap, he got a lot of money on an annual basis in Denver, but it was a short deal, the one that the Hawks probably would have matched had they actually been trying to win games this season. They're definitely doing the long-range planning. They did, some stopgap moves, like you mentioned, signing Dedman and Babbitt were sort of at least moves to be competitive this year. But everything that they did this offseason was basically geared towards the future. They've been compiling draft picks. They're going to have three first-round picks in 2018 and probably at least two in 2019 based on the way that some of those are going to be conveying. So it's definitely a forward-thinking sort of regime right now with Travis Schlenk, a new general manager. But for the most part, this year is kind of almost a foregone conclusion that wasn't going to go super well when it comes to results. And that's going to be kind of the background of everything that's going on right now.
Now, the reason I ask is because Mike Budenholzer kind of reminds me of Eric Spoelstra and Rick Carlisle, and that every year you think they're going to rebuild and somehow they manage to weasel their way into the playoffs. And this year I'm looking at the standings right now, and obviously it's very early, but we've got the Knicks at sixth, the 76ers at 7, the Hornets at 8th. You don't think there's any chance that the Hawks kind of find their footing midway through the season and make a late run and push their way into the 8th spot, do you?
I'm probably not, only because I think that this team was going to probably need to get off to a hot start because they're so forward-focused. I think if anything, they're going to be trying to sell as the season moves along. They have a couple of guys on expiring contracts, whether that be Dedman or Bellinelli or even Ursula Ilyasova. All these guys are on expiring deals, and if the Hawks can probably get something from them in trade, they will probably look to do that. So I think, you know, the best chance for this team to make a sort of a fringe playoff run was going to be to get off out of the gates hot and with a good start, which obviously has not happened, which we kind of talked about. So I think they can be certainly competitive. That, you know, most of the games that they've been in this season, they've been very competitive in. It's not like they're getting blown out every night, but at the same time, they don't have that sort of top end talent right now to sort of win those close games in the way that you might expect. So they're, you know, they're well coached. They're probably, you know, more entertaining than your average team that has the record that they have, but I don't really see that kind of run coming.
Now, I know that's not why we're here, but I know a certain team in New Orleans who could definitely use some players like Dwayne Dedmon, Ersan Ilyasova. The Pelicans are so void of talent at the backup five right now. They've just been playing Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins, staggering them 40 minutes a game. They have not brought in a backup four or five in, I think, 3 games now. So, you know, if you guys ever need to unload them and want to take some unwanted salary back for like a first round pick, you guys know who you can call. But let's talk about your most recent matchups. You guys narrowly lost to the Cavs and the Celtics this week in successive games before falling to the suddenly surging 8-3 Pistons tonight by 7. You were just telling me off air about that game. You play the Wizards tomorrow night before heading to New Orleans for the third game in 4 nights. Before we touch on exactly what happened tonight, what is the attitude of your fans in general going into this difficult stretch? Are you guys just despair, or you're all like, you know, kind of like preaching process like the 76ers at this point? What is the current mood of Hawks fans?
Yeah, there's probably something of a divide. I think there's certainly some people I try to preach that this is sort of the process, and, you know, looking at the schedule ahead of time here, as you kind of mentioned, a bunch of tough road games. There was a stretch here where, you know, the Hawks have not been favored in a game all season when it comes to Las Vegas. And I looked at the schedule and, you know, the next time that they could be favored would be a home game next Wednesday against the Kings. So all of these games that we're talking about, the Hawks are not supposed to win. You know, it doesn't mean that they're not able to win one or two of these games, but at the same time, like, no one's really expected them to do so. So it's sort of some hopeful optimism when it comes to the young guys. It's a mood on one side, and the other side is sort of already frustrated, which I understand. This has been a playoff team for a long time, so this is the first time they've sort of gone out of that. Basically a decade now they've been in the playoffs, so it's one of those things where you're adjusting to a new life for a lot of newer Hawks fans, especially a lot of younger Hawks fans don't even remember the last time that the Hawks were going to be a non-playoff team. So it's just that adjustment period, but for the most part, spirits are reasonably high still. You know, check back in March if this team gets even uglier in the standings, and people might be a little bit more frustrated. But for now, I think people are still sort of holding on to hope more than anything else.
What is your thought? I think it was 3 years ago, maybe 2014, when the Hawks won 60 games and just shocked everybody. And you just come away from that team, pretty much everybody from that roster at this point is probably gone. Do you ever look back and think like, you were so close and you had a shot and it just like fizzled away so quickly? Or do you feel like that team just really overperformed that year?
Sort of a combination of both, I think. I mean, it was an overperformance in some ways. Like, I think even if you look at their numbers from that year, winning 60 games was probably not quite indicative of what that team was. But at the same time, that was a lot of fun. That team famously had 4 All-Stars, and, they probably overachieved, but it was very, very fun basketball, just sort of different than what you normally see, a lot of unselfish play, passing, just sort of a pleasure to watch. So it feels like it was not that long ago. And, as you kind of mentioned, there's only one guy that's still on the team from then, and that was Dennis Schroeder, and he was a pure backup on that team. So yeah, it's been a while. Obviously, then since that team sort of was able to run through the Eastern Conference, and there was a stretch where they won 17 straight games, just feels like that a lot's changed since then. But yeah, I mean, it's a weird situation in that it isn't that long ago, I guess, if you just look at the pure calendar and all that kind of stuff. So they probably overachieved. It was a fun team. I mean, honestly, that was the best team in Hawks history. They'd never made even the conference finals in any other season except for that one, since they actually moved to Atlanta in the 50s. So that's sort of a memorable squad for longtime Hawks fans, and it will be for a long time. But yeah, it's a lot's changed since then.
Now, you are listening to the Bird Rice here on Nothing But Net Network with Brad Rowland of Locked On Hawks and Peachtree Hoops. Let's talk about last night's matchup. I'm here skimming through Sam Meredith's post on Peachtree Hoops, and it's saying you guys were down by as much as 19 before Dennis Schroeder and Kent Bazemore kind of took over in the fourth quarter. Schroeder had 17-11, Bazemore had 22-5-5. Down 19, tied the game up late before Reggie Jackson hit 2 huge three-pointers. Talk a bit about the fight in your team. We mentioned a rebuilding team, a bunch of young players, but down 19 against one of the best teams in the East right now, and you guys weren't willing to give up.
Yeah, that's been sort of a theme all season long. Like, there's been a bunch of times where it seems like the Hawks could get blown out in certain games. You know, being that they're now 2-10, it's not like this. They've won a lot of these, but at the same time, like, they've been able to scratch and claw back in a lot of these spots where it looked like they're going to get blown out. Like tonight, in the game we're talking about with Detroit, they're, you know, down 19 late in the second quarter, and then they certainly could have rolled over. There was no reason for them to necessarily think they were going to be able to get back in that game, but they were able to hold on and kind of just push and fight. Made a bunch of big threes. Kent Bazemore hit three threes in the fourth quarter, which it's not like he's incapable of doing that, but not normally the guy you would think to be shooting the Hawks back into a basketball game. But they really sort of just have this no quit attitude. They really only have one blowout loss all year, and it was against Charlotte in the second game of the season. And since then, they have some double digit losses, but they're more in that 11-12 point range. And you know, some of those probably got a little bit looser than that at time. They just keep coming, and they're just not going to quit. You know, credit to Mike Budenholzer with that as well. It's a very good culture for a team that may not be very good this year. You know, they're very well coached, and they they're probably better defensively than they are offensively, which probably helps as well to sort of keep things together. But they don't really have that gene where they're rolling over. Hopefully that's going to continue all season long. You know, it might be a little bit more frustrating later on in the season if their record is ugly, as we've kind of expected to be. But for now, they seem to be playing hard on a nightly basis, which is a lot of fun.
Okay, let's go through your roster a bit here. I was looking over at teamrankings.com, and you guys are pretty much in the bottom 10 in just about every category. So I'd love to touch on some of the young players that we can expect to see on Monday night. Obviously, we'll have some version of a Dennis Schroeder, Kent Babbitt, and then probably starting, I would assume, Dwayne Dedman at this point, Torian Prince, and then Ersan Ilyasova. Is that your starting lineup right now?
Yeah, Ilyasova has been banged up, but that was the starting lineup on opening night. It's basically been the starting lineup whenever they're all available. It's been Luke Babbitt the last couple of games because Ilyasova and Mike Muscala are both been banged up. So it's that power forward spot's been sort of a revolving door. But if everybody was healthy, that's probably what you would see.
Now, John Collins was pretty spectacular in the limited action I saw him in Las Vegas Summer League. He's already playing 21 minutes a game, which is a pretty healthy clip for a rookie, especially one taken. I think he was taken somewhere around 10th. You'll know better than I would. But talk a bit about his progress and what we can expect from him in this game.
Yeah, Collins is a lot of fun. I mean, he's certainly the most entertaining player on the roster right now. Not the best player just yet, but he's been, I would say, overachieving expectations early on. You know, rookies, for the most part, are bad, especially guys who are drafted. He was number 19 overall, so, you know, back half of the first round. He was an established college guy, but at the same time, you don't really expect those guys to come in and be positive players right away, but he certainly has been. Some highlight dunks. You mentioned Summer League. He was a lot of fun there, sort of one of the better highlight guys in Las Vegas, and since then, there's been some of that in the regular season, but yeah, just more just efficiency. Like, he's very good around the rim. He's a very good rebounder, very, very athletic, and a good energy player around the rim. You know, defensively, there's still some concerns because he's a rookie. He doesn't really know where he's going just yet a lot of the time. But when you're 6'10", 6'11", and you're athletic and bouncy, you're able to make up for some of that with just instincts and being able to sort of fly around a little bit. So yeah, Collins is he's definitely the primary backup center right now. He's also played some power forward. So that kind of recipe is, you know, 20-plus minutes a night. And that's a little bit surprising to me, and that Mike Budenholzer doesn't always love rookies, but he's been playing so well that it's basically impossible to keep him off the floor right now.
And it's good that you guys have so many big men, because one thing the Pelicans have had trouble with is DeMarcus Cousins and Anthony Davis do an exemplary job of getting big men into foul trouble early. So these teams who are a little bit lighter at depth at the five have gotten into trouble super early into games. But you guys are pretty loaded in your front court. I don't know, again, who's going to be playing, who's going to be out. But with Dedman, Collins, Muscala, Miles Plumlee, you guys have a lot of bodies that you can throw at big men, right?
Yeah, I mean, the only, recently it's because guys have been banged up with Muscala and Ilyasova, especially kind of missing games. But if everybody's available, then that's certainly one of the strengths that they can go pretty deep there. And Bud doesn't love to play a lot of small ball. I mean, he's had to do a little bit of that recently because of the injuries. But if even a reasonable complement of guys are available against New Orleans, we'll see some pretty traditional lineups, a lot of two big sets, that kind of stuff. And, that's not necessarily the greatest thing against the Pelicans, because the Pelicans have two better bigs than anybody that Atlanta has, but they can certainly match up, and it wouldn't be as big a concern as a lot of teams would in terms of just sort of running out of guys.
All right, let's talk a bit about your depth. I see Isaiah Taylor on here. You guys will have some version of Luke Babbitt if he's not in the starting lineup, Malcolm Delaney. What can the Pelicans expect to see from your second units early on second quarters and late in the third quarter, and how have these guys been producing?
Yeah, the absence of DeAndre Bembry hurts a little bit in that way, because he was projected to be, if not the sixth man, definitely one of the seven or a top seven rate guys in terms of minutes. But without him, you have guys like you mentioned there. They've been playing a lot of 2-point guard sets with Isaiah Taylor and Malcolm Delaney. Like, it's actually been working fairly well recently. Marco Bellinelli is probably the most high-profile bench guy. He takes a lot of shots, has the ball in his hands a lot. He's not shy about getting shots up, and Bellinelli's been around the block a few hundred times at this point. So that's a guy who people are familiar with. He can certainly win you a game or a quarter by just making a bunch of shots. He can also sort of shoot you out of a game as well with these not having the greatest night in the world. But he's an interesting bench wing. And then, you know, Babbitt's a solid guy. I mean, you guys know him well from his time in New Orleans. Yeah, Babbitt has actually been playing very, very well in some short minutes recently. He's been thrust into more duty because of the injuries up front. He's actually been playing quite well. I'm not sure how sustainable that is, but you'll see a lot of him as well. And other than that, it's a bit guys. You know, you have Tyler Dorsey's played a couple of games. He's a rookie second round pick that you could see in a pinch, as well as a Tyler Cavanaugh played a very, very small amount. He's actually on a 2-way contract, but because the Hawks are bad on some injuries, he's been able to come and play a few minutes. But for the most part, it's Taylor, it's Delaney, it's Bellinelli, and it's Babbitt as sort of your consistent bench player right now.
Just for your opinion's sake, I want to talk about your salary cap very briefly. And it's just in regards to Dennis Schroeder. You don't have a lot on your books beyond Miles Plumlee and, Kent Bazemore. How are you guys feeling 1 year into your 4-year, $70 million point guard?
Yeah, I think it's tough to get super duper excited about Schroeder's contract, but it's also not a bad one, if that makes sense. He's very young. You're basically locking him up for his entire prime, at least what you expect his prime to be based on his age. And Schroeder he's fine. I think he's a below average starting point guard, but that's not really not necessarily a shot at him, because there's so many quality guys in the NBA that, you know, if he was somewhere around the 23rd best point guard in the league, that's not a terrible place to be. And then he's appropriately paid, I would think. It's not a bargain. There is some ceiling left in him. I think he's young enough to where you could see him grow a little bit more, especially defensively. That was my big issue with him last year, is that he just didn't defend all season long. You know, offensively, he actually did some pretty good things. And this year, his numbers are good. He has the ball in his hands probably too often, based on just the lack of options the Hawks have offensively. But I've been, you know, for the most part, I think it's a fine contract. It's nothing to be excited about or just be really angry about either. The Hawks have these two bad contracts with Kent Bazemore, which isn't awful because he can play a little bit, but he's certainly overpaid. And then you have Miles Plumlee, who is almost dead salary, that he basically hasn't been playing at all, and he's been banged up. But you know, they traded Dwight Howard knowing full well that Miles Plumlee's contract is going to be pretty bad. So Schroeder is he's the guy making a lot of money that they're not upset with in terms of having that guy on the books. But at the same time, I don't really see a ton of like extra value with that contract either.
You guys are listening to the Bird Rights here on Nothing But Net Network with Brad Rowland of Locked On Hawks and Peachtree Hoops. Let's wrap this up, Brad. Give me your prediction for Monday night. It's in the Smoothie King Center. You guys are on, I think, your third game in 4 nights. How do you expect your team to perform?
Yeah, I mean, as you kind of mentioned there, it's a pretty tough spot for Atlanta, third game in 4 nights. And, you know, the Pelicans are just better than the Hawks right now. I was looking at 538 when we were talking earlier. The 538 odds basically have the Pelicans as about a 10.5-point favorite in that game, which makes a lot of sense based on, you know, the Hawks going on the road and probably being a little bit winded. You know, fortunately, it's not the second game of a back-to-back. They have a back-to-back, then an off day, and then it's the Pelicans. But still, I'd be pretty surprised if the Hawks won this game. It's not that they couldn't win this game, but I think I would be picking the Pelicans pretty comfortably in this spot. You know, barring some sort of health thing with one of their main players, or same thing with the Hawks. But I think all things equal, this is a game the Pelicans should probably win. And you know, the Hawks are capable of stinging them if they play well, and New Orleans sort of tries to nail it in a little bit. But if everybody plays sort of their B-plus game, I think New Orleans wins pretty comfortably.
All right. Thank you so much to Brad Rowland of Locked On Hawks and Peachtree Hoops. Again, you can follow him at BT Rowland, at Locked On Hawks, and at Peachtree Hoops. I'm your host, Preston Ellis. As always, remember to retweet, subscribe to the pod on iTunes, and rate it. We are approaching 50,000 downloads, but we need your help to continue growing. You guys, just if you could take 2 seconds, open that podcast app, search the Bird Rights, give us a 5-star rating. We really appreciate it. Thank you all so much for your support. We'll be back tomorrow night with a recap followed by some more game previews. Brad, before we sign off, is there anything that you hope our listeners will go and check out of your work before Monday night's contest?
Nothing specific. Just- Just check out PeachtreeHoops.com. That's the best place to find everything. And my podcast is the Locked On Hawks podcast, which is also on Peachtree Hoops. We host that a little bit, and it's on the Megaphone and Apple Podcasts and Stitcher, all those fun places that you can find podcasts. So just use your player if you want to find one. Just search for Locked On Hawks, and I'm sure it will be there. So that's probably the best place to find me.
All right. Thank you so much for your time, Brad. If you have time, whenever we match up with you guys in Atlanta, I have no idea when the game is, but we'd love to have you back on. We really appreciate your time.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure. Happy to do it.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Let's go, Pels. Thanks again, Pelicans fans. Again, you are listening to The Bird Rights on Nothing But Net Network here on Dash Radio. Subscribe to The Bird Rights on iTunes and give us a follow at The Bird Rights. Thanks for listening.